Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witch School's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witch School's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, shaman, and brother initiate, and you know, once I get the kinks worked out, soon to be teacher of the Unnamed Path.
And I'm Matthew Sidney, musician, writer, and how should we say it, student of the all that there is. And thank you all for joining us on this episode of Walking the Unnamed Path. And we've decided to take a slightly different direction. We are going to continue to have a lot of exciting guests and talk about current events, but we didn't want to forget about or stray too far from our tradition and talking about it and sharing it with you. So we're going to do a little series on each of the deities of the Unnamed Path, and today we're going to talk about the Light Goddess.
Yes, and you know, but before we get into that, we're going to catch up a little bit because it has been a while since I've talked to Matthew and he's talked to me. But if you want to get in touch with us, you can call in to the show. You know, we'll keep an eye on the switchboard and see if anyone calls in. You can call in at 347-308-8222, or you can hang out in the chat room, which we'll get up and running shortly if it's working. Hasn't worked the last few times I tried using it. Or you can email us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at walking_theup. Or you can find us on Facebook. You know, Facebook is one of the best ways to get in touch with us, at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. So Matthew, how have you been? I have not spoken to you in such a long time.
I've been well. I've been very well. Let's see, what has been going on? I think I did already mention the in-person for one of the classes that are currently happening for Unnamed Path apprentices. And not only did we have the students there and the student teachers, but a number of the initiates were able to attend. And we had an amazing time in San Diego. And
so jealous.
Other than
jealous.
Next time you have to come to the next puppy pile. And what else has been going on? Just life in general. Obviously, you know, things are coming fast and furious in our world. And I guess right now I'm just digging my heels into my geeky fanboyness, and I'm on the edge of my seat. Anxious and excited and overwhelmed to see Wonder Woman next week.
It's
going to be a religious experience for me, and I have the chills, and I know it's going to be amazing. And Gal Gadot is the perfect actress for this role, and she's beautiful, and you look in her eyes and you see this beautiful soul. She's magnificent inside and out, and I'm running out of words. I'm so excited.
I can't wait to see that too. I don't know if I want to try to see it on Thursday night, because, you know, they always do, you know, a couple of showings in the evening on Thursday before the official, you know, out date on Friday. But I'm so excited.
Yeah, I actually got my tickets already for Thursday night, which is something I never, ever, ever do. I'm normally that type of person who waits until something's been out for 2 or 3 weeks, or I'll just wait till it comes out on DVD or whatever. But this one, I couldn't wait. And when I went to buy the tickets, there were tons of seats available. So I went ahead and got tickets for me and a guest. And so I'm totally letting – I will totally be letting my geek flag fly next week.
Now, are you going to go dressed as Wonder Woman is the question, because I've seen some fabulous cross cosplays.
I wish that I had that kind of talent. I would love to do that, and I've seen a lot of the cosplay pics, and both boys and girls dressed up as a character or adaptations of character, and there's so many talented people out there that, you know, I'm blessed with some talents, but costuming and cosplay is unfortunately not one of them. maybe one day I'll meet a really talented person who will say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you know, dress you up. But no, I'm a lack and a laugh. I'm just going to go dressed as my humble, normal self.
Well, that's good too.
Yeah, that's okay. So what about you? What's going on? What's new?
It's been an interesting past few weeks for me. Let's see. I'm getting ready for Pagan Spirit Gathering, which is coming up in, it's for the summer solstice. It's like June 17th through the 28th, I think. Yes, that sounds about right. It's close to that time. But I was a little on the fence about going this year. I'd already registered, but I was debating whether or not to go because of something else that happened this past couple of weeks. And I'll mention that in a minute. But I kind of got the nudge to go when one of the people who she's the head person for PSG was asking for volunteers a few weeks ago, and I sent her an email saying, you know, I'd be interested in helping and whatnot. And she sent me an email about a week and a half ago asking if I would be interested in being a coordinator. I was like, sure.
That's really cool.
So I'm going to be an assistant coordinator for torch lighting, which doesn't sound, you know, that exciting, but, you know, kind of a important part of the festival because they place torches all around, like, the vendors row and whatnot, and even going out towards some of the campsites. So, you know, it'll be my job and another coordinator's job to meet with the people who volunteer to light the torches every morning. We'll meet with them and we'll let them know what they need to do in the evening to go and light the torches, and then, you know, give out assignments for filling up the torches in the morning. So
cool.
Should be fun. You know, there were a couple of perks
job.
That come with. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of perks that come with it. Like, I get to arrive a day early. So PSG is Sunday to Sunday. I get to arrive the Saturday before to, you know, set up and meetings and whatnot. And apparently I also get access to a golf cart, which sounds kind of scary because I'm...
Why is that scary? Are you not a good driver?
I'm a good driver, but in my head I picture it like when I used to go to, like, go-karting with friends.
Yeah.
I was the person who would be bouncing on the rail trying not to crash. So I'm like, I just need to go light on the gas pedal, light on the gas pedal, and I should be fine. But you know, there's a couple of other things. I'm like, oh wow, I didn't know coordinators got all this, and I'm like really excited about it. So, and I think that, I believe that covers my community service for the week. So all I have to do is make sure the torches get lit and refilled every day.
That's an important job.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about it. It's my first time being any type of coordinator or in charge of anything at PSG. And I've been going for about 6 years now. I'm really excited about it.
Cool.
But going back to the reason why I was a little hesitant about attending this year is because I actually am now single. I've been in a relationship for almost 3 years, and a couple of weeks ago my partner and I split. So yeah, it's been a bit of an emotional roller coaster for me the last few weeks. And
I imagine. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, when it initially happened, I did my crying and my grieving for the relationship. And, as it's gone on, I've gotten more, I don't know what the right word is. And I feel like I'm about to sneeze, but I've gotten more accepting of it that, okay, it's over and I need to, start figuring out what I want to do, because my partner and I had planned to move down to Dallas in October, so now that's not going to happen. Well, I'm still moving, he's staying here, and trying to figure out, do I really want to stay in Dallas or do I want to go somewhere else? And so I've made a list of possible cities that I'm thinking of moving to. Some of them are, there's a couple here in the Midwest. Like I cannot imagine staying in a small town anymore. I miss the big city. So, there's a couple here in the Midwest, like St. Louis or Chicago. And I know people in those cities. Like the qualifications for the places where I'm thinking of moving to are, I know people there. Well, I know people there and I'm fairly close to them. Like they're good friends or they're distant family or something like that. And I'm thinking of three places in California. Kind of thinking Portland, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to deal with the rain and the snow. But I don't think they get that much snow, so it should be fine. Still a couple, I could theoretically still stay in Dallas or Houston. They're thinking of a couple places in Florida, maybe Colorado, which again, snow. I'm like, I don't know if I want to deal with the snow anymore. I have a good number of places that I'm considering. And, it's going to take me a little bit to figure out where exactly I want to go. But kind of have a general plan at the moment to move back to Dallas for a little bit to regroup and spend some much-needed time with my family, because I haven't seen them really. Like, I made a couple of trips to Dallas. Well, one was for a funeral, and one was, to take my partner so he can see what it's like in Dallas, or my ex-partner, sorry. Still got to get used to thinking ex. I feel like I need some time with my family. So I'm going to do that for a little bit. And then after I've spent, maybe almost 6 months or something like that, could be a year, I don't know yet. Everything is flexible. I'll figure out where I want to go from there.
Yeah, and new beginnings can be a good thing, and it's a positive opportunity, new experiences, new people. new places, maybe.
Yeah. And see, I've only ever lived in Dallas and here, where I'm currently living in Champaign. So any of those places would be an adventure. So it's actually rather exciting.
Nice.
But,
nice.
But yeah. So that's what's been going on with me.
Okay.
But,
all right, so I did, you know, in preparation for today's episode, I decided to go back to the original series of Unnamed Path podcast by Hyperion, and it's episode 4 where he talks about. And it's interesting the way he frames it. The title of that episode is The Goddess. And so just to frame it for our listeners, in the Unnamed Path, we work with 4 deities, the Light God, the Dark God, the Light Goddess, and the Dark Goddess. And in episode 4, Hyperion makes it very clear that Goddess and the Dark Goddess are aspects of the Goddess. They are aspects of one divine feminine being with whom we work as practitioners of the Unnamed Path. And it had been a really long time since I had listened to that episode. And of course, I went through the apprenticeship, and now I'm in the throes of the student-teacher class, which is basically the apprenticeship all over again, except on steroids. And it was kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting to go back to Hyperion's podcast and listen to the public material, because it was actually really helpful for me. It put some uncertainties into focus for me. So I'm really glad, and I'm kind of thinking that now I owe it to myself, when I have the time, to go back and really re-listen to all of his podcasts, all over again. Because I think time goes by and we evolve, and when we go back, it's an opportunity to hear things with fresh ears.
Yeah, I saw your post earlier about re-listening to the podcast. I was like, I should do that too. And the podcast is not, like, the episode for that on the goddesses is not that long. It's only like 32 minutes. So it's a really quick listen. Actually, most of Hyperion's original work with the Unnamed Path podcast, they're all under an hour generally, about 30 to 40 minutes. So you can listen to several in a row. But, listening back there, I was like, I never got to meet Hyperion. So hearing his voice, just listening to it again, I was like, okay, yeah, this, is my connection to him and the teachings he got from the ancestors and from the gods. So, just letting it soak in. I was like you were saying, it's interesting listening to the public material from back then and, what we learned in our apprenticeship training, which, we can't go into too much on that because, you need to go through the class to do that. But
That was actually one of the reasons why I went back to the podcast, because in preparation for this episode, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I got to be a good little boy and make sure that only present more exoteric, as it were, material, and not, share things that are really meant for people who are doing the work under the guidance of an initiated teacher. And one thing that I really loved, and it really struck me in listening to this episode, was how well Hyperion explains things.
Mm-hmm.
it's almost effortless. He gets a point across very succinctly, and, you know, I totally grokked what he was saying, and, you know, it helps me, you know, and as I assist, as a student teacher, and if I eventually become a teacher, it's helpful for me, because I hope to be able to maybe assimilate some of that skill, because I feel like sometimes I try to explain things, I just go blah, 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 and I'm not sure if I'm making any sense. So it's kind of inspiring on that end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's also important to remember, you know, when Hyperion made the podcast, you know, it was as he was getting the info from the ancestors. And he may have, you know, had it planned out a little bit, but our thoughts and ideas on some of the topics that he taught in the podcast when it first came out, he changed later on. Like,
yeah.
in one of the podcasts, one of the first ones where he talks about raising the crossroads, he's using the elements like you do in tradition, like in Wicca or regular traditional witchcraft, to, you know, cast the, you know, the points of the compass. We don't do that. We don't use those elements. We have the elements of life and death, hot and cold. But we still, you know, we work with those elements, but we don't necessarily work with them that way. So,
right.
You know, some of that info is a little outdated, so that's another reason why it's always good to take the apprenticeship courses, because you'll get more up-to-date info, because Hyperion
yeah.
got the chance to go back and update
yeah.
what he had put out
yeah.
before.
It's important, I think, for all of us, both within the tradition and also, you know, people who are just, you know, fans, as it were, of the tradition, to realize that, you know, it's a living tradition, and there's really, you know, nothing, I don't think there's much that can be taken as canon, so to speak, you know, because it was something that was being revealed and in the process of unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of our listeners who are not aware, as I mentioned, there are four deities, and those of us who go through the apprenticeship and become initiated, upon initiation, we are initiated under a primary patron or matron deity. So that means, although each one of us has a strong relationship with all four of the deities, each one of us has identified one of those four with whom we have the strongest resonance, the strongest relationship. So in my case, the terminology is, in my case, I'm a child of the light goddess, who we're talking about today. And Michael, who are you a child of?
I am a child of the dark god. So, yeah.
Good.
You know, it's important to note, like Matthew was saying, we each have our primary deity, and we also work with the others. But, you know, another child of the light goddess, like Matthew, they'll have similar relationships, but they won't be exactly the same, because our relationships with our matron or patron god or goddess is, I guess the right word would be customized to the individual. Like, we envision them differently.
Personal. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we envision them differently. How we interact with them is different between each child. And, you know, it's very much a personal experience with the gods and goddesses.
Yeah, I liken it to our personal relationships in the mortal realm. For instance, I have a relationship with my father, and we communicate in a certain way, and My brothers, on the other hand, each have their own relationship with him that looks very different from my relationship with him. Even though he's the same person, he's the same father, and he's the father to all of us, we each may relate to him in a different way, connect with him in a different way, have different things in common with him. And like you said, Michael, I think it's similar here in our tradition. You know, your relationship mm-hmm. with the dark god doesn't necessarily look exactly the same as someone else's whose primary patron is the dark god.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to paraphrase. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, one of the things that, got us to, decide to do this today, we had someone in the Facebook group for the Unnamed Path ask about, what our relationships were with the gods and goddesses, talking about deity worship and whatnot. And I'm trying to remember exactly how he had worded it. I'm trying to find that screenshot I had sent you real quick.
Yeah, I think he said something along the lines of how do you honor and worship them?
Yeah, it was, he was asking for more information about the four components of the Unnamed Path. How are we practicing them? Do we do any deity worship or honoring? And, that started a little bit of a discussion in the group, and I thought, we thought it would be something we should definitely talk about because, we wanted to do a series on the gods and goddesses, and so this is a pretty good entry point right here. We have someone actually asking us in the Facebook group, about it, and, an important thing to know is, we don't really worship, the gods and goddesses. We work with them. We have a relationship with them. Yes, we, we do. Thank you, dark god, or thank you, light goddess, or dark goddess, or light god. We ask for their help, but it's a working relationship, basically. And it's something that we've built over time, and again, it's different for each brother.
Right. So I'm just to frame things for our listeners, I'm going to go back to Hyperion's teaching, and one of the things he emphasized is that those of us who are men who love men, we connect with the divine feminine in a slightly different way than straight men or women in general. Many straight men and women in their connection to the goddess tends to follow the Wiccan and or, dare I say it, mainstream pagan concept of the goddess or divine feminine. And so for women, that'll look like I am the embodiment of or expression of the divine feminine. And for a lot of straight men, it'll look like an erotic relationship. This divine feminine, she is the expression of the idealized sexual partner of my own divine self. For those of us who are men who mm-hmm. love men, and where in our primary romantic attraction is towards other men, our relationship with the divine feminine is a little different. And Hyperion identifies that as looking like a mother-son relationship or like a teacher-student relationship. And if we think about in real life, gay men, and if we use the term men who love men, often have unique relationships with women that look completely different than the kind of even friendships that straight men will have with women. And so that is reflected in how we connect with the divine feminine. And this is why we've been taught to connect with the divine feminine through these two faces of the light goddess and the dark goddess, who are unique to the unnamed path, rather than working through other models, such as the triple goddess, the more well-known cultural lenses, whether it be Brigid or Aphrodite, etc. So, and then also, because we're gonna narrow it down today to talk about the light goddess, Hyperion discusses how this divine feminine, as she interacts with our resonance as men who love men, she manifests in two aspects. And that we can think of that as the point singularity that preceded the Big Bang, or was at the beginning of the Big Bang, and the other face is after the Big Bang, all manifestation in the universe. The dark goddess, that's how we think of the dark goddess and the light goddess, respectively. The dark goddess, we are taught to think of as the potential, the singularity, the unmanifest that is pregnant with the cosmos, pregnant with anything that might happen. And the light goddess represents the fabric behind everything that is manifest. So another analogy that he uses is think of the darkness of space versus all the stars and stuff. So the dark goddess is the dark emptiness, and the light goddess is all the stars and planets and stuff and oceans and nebulae and all that fabulous, delicious, jewel-like, mind-blowing stuff. Of course, maybe it's best to think of these as metaphors, but this is kind of how we're taught to understand the dichotomy between the two.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Before we start talking into our interactions with the light goddess and, you know, how, you know, you and I both work with her, let's take a quick break and, you know, play a song so that we can, get our thoughts in order on how, you know, we work with her and, you know, just who she is in general to us. So we're going to play a song. We're going to play Spiral Rhythm, Wise in Her Ways.
Sing, my sister, sing. Sing out loud of all you bring. For what you sing is what you are, and you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Dance, my sisters, dance. Trance and prance and make romance. For how you dance is what you are, and you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Speak, my sister, speak. Speak out loud and don't be meek. For how you speak is what you are, and you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Dream, my sisters, dream. Dream of all the love you'd see. For what you dream is what you are, and you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Bleed, my sisters, bleed. Releasing all you do not need. For how you bleed is what you are, in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Cry, my sisters, cry. Shed your tears till they run dry. For how you cry is what you are. And you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Birth, my sister's birth. Draw your strength up from the earth. For how you birth is what you are. And you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Pray, my sisters, pray. Giving thanks for each new day. For how you pray is what you are. And you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Smile, my sister, smile. Let your heart sing for a while. For how you smile is what you are. And you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. So love, my sister's love, like the sun's own rays shine from above. For how you love is what you are. And you're wise in the ways of the woman by far. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are. Wise in the ways of the woman by far. You're wise in her ways, that's what you are.
And that was Spar Rhythm, Wise in Her Ways.
That was beautiful.
Haven't heard
Spar
Rhythm before. They're one of my favorite bands. I see them every year at PSG. Amazing people. But, you know, while we were, you know, listening to the song, we actually have a caller who has a question for us. I'm going to bring him on. His name is Michael. Woo, Michael. So here you go. Hello, Michael. Well, thank you for calling in. What was the question?
Good afternoon. Yeah. So the rituals that you find yourselves doing for your respective deities, the light and dark god and goddess, do those seem to follow a particular format across the board, or are they more specific to the individual deities? And do those look like anything from any other path that you're familiar with, or are they just kind of their own animal?
They're unlike anything that you've ever seen before, and unlike anything you ever will see. What we practice
and
is what we practice is very much a revelatory tradition. So there's not much. There's no liturgy. There are no formal or formalized rituals in our tradition. Our tradition is about building personal relationships. And so when I work with the deities, they will tell me what they want. I will honor them and work with them as the spirit moves me. And my practice is not going to look exactly like Michael's or any of the other initiates necessarily. And of course, we come together And there are many, many exercises that we learn in the apprenticeship that we share in common. But those exercises aren't exactly full-blown rituals. So there is no Sabbat. There is no charge of the light goddess in the unnamed path. It's always going to look a little different. Even our rituals that we do regularly, for example, Circle of Bones, there are certain things that will be common, but I've never been to two Circle of Bones that look exactly the same. And mm-hmm. there's not a whole lot of reverence. There's reverence, but at least in my experience, I was specifically told by the dark goddess not to worship the gods, that they are interested in our personal empowerment. They can express themselves through us, and they want to have a relationship with us. They are not interested in us groveling at their feet. They are interested in us overcoming our own weaknesses so that we can blossom into our own personal divinity. And I think of it more as a familial relationship. If you have a parent or a grandparent who genuinely loves you and genuinely wants what's best for you, that parent or grandparent would be quite offended if you were to prostrate yourself on the floor before them.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy relationship with a healthy parent or grandparent, they want to lift you up, and they want you to stand proudly before them, of course, showing respect. So, and another aspect of the unnamed path, which I don't see much of this in Wicca, I don't see much of this in the Druid tradition, it's, of course, very prevalent in the Afro-Caribbean traditions, is possessory work. And in the unnamed path, the gods come down, and they possess us, and they will use our bodies to convey important information to the others present. So really, that's the ultimate form of ritual, as it were. Maybe some think of, say, you know, I've heard someone say it's, in their mind, it's the ultimate sacrifice, and that is allowing these cosmic beings to borrow our bodies in order to bless and teach and inspire and share information with the other people present.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like trans prophecy.
Yes, yes. Which is something else that we also do. We also do that too.
And yes and no, because that's also a different thing.
But that's also a part of our tradition. Where there are, you know, and I think, like, in my personal practice, you know, I will do things such as light a candle, craft prayers, craft hymns. You know, I'm a writer. I'm a poet. I'm a musician. So I love writing poetry. I love writing songs. I have certainly written more than one song to the light goddess, and as a form of celebrating her. And, you know, I guess that could be considered a form of devotion, a form of worship. But, you know, for someone else, their connection might be a little different. So I would have to say that it's definitely going to vary from individual to individual.
Yes. You know, it's very hard to add to anything Matthew just said, because he covered it just so well. Oh my gosh. But it varies from brother to brother. And it depends on the individual. For myself, when I do like any type of honoring or working with the dark god, you know, my kind of ritual is not so much letting the dark god fully possess me, because I still have, you know, some issues on, you know, letting go completely, but he does pop in whenever he feels like it, or whenever my guides will let him. Because that's another thing. Our guides and spirits that we work with we have our own spiritual court. They have first say, yes, no, you can come in or you can't come in. They help keep us as an individual in balance with the deities.
And actually, that kind of feeds into another question that I had too. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. No.
Oh, go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was just gonna say whenever I go out, you know, I always get the message that, you know, we need to dance, we need to stir up energy, we need to be in motion when we are communing with the gods. So when I actually go out and I go dancing, you know, with friends, I start to allow the dark god to just kind of enter me a little bit, like not completely taking over, and just let him feel my movements and feel the energy of the dance floor. And that is some of my worship or honoring to him. There's other stuff, but I'm not going to go into that on the air, that I do with him. So.
So that kind of fed into another question that I had. With, you know, those of us who already work with specific spirits and deities and what have you, where do the gods of the unnamed path fit in? Do they mind, you know, sharing spiritual space with other deities typically? Or, you know, are we allowed to continue working with whatever gods we were already, you know, quote unquote, in a relationship with? Or, you know, how does that work?
They do not mind.
Short answer, gods.
I mean, my perception is our gods are not jealous gods. I think many of the initiates of the unnamed path also practice other traditions as well. So there are unnamed path brothers who also practice the Anderson fairy tradition. There are unnamed path initiates who practice Gardnerian Wicca. So there are, there's an element of Hellenic practice in my personal practice. So that being said, I can't speak for anyone else. Personally, I try to keep those practices separate. So something from my history, I had a teacher who's a Lakota Sioux holy man. So we did a lot of sweat lodges, very traditional sweat lodges. So if I were to go to a sweat lodge, I wouldn't go there and start doing unnamed path things. I wouldn't go there and start invoking the dark god of the unnamed path, so to speak. I would politely keep those traditions discreet from one another. But my perception and the way I've moved through the unnamed path is that this is something to help complement what we have going on, and it's not expected to replace. Now, for me, unnamed path is definitely front and center in my practice right now. So I'm not really working very much with other deities. And another thing is that the unnamed path deities are at a different level than cultural pantheons. And I've heard it said that they're primordial beings. I've heard it said that they're titanic forces. So in many ways, you know, you could almost say, well, they're a different generation. They're the great-grandparents of the cultural pantheons. So, you know, for some of us, you know, it's a way to honor our ancestors. A lot of people like to embrace the practices of their own ethnicity, or they've been brought into a particular cultural practice, and which I certainly think is an extremely positive and valuable, important thing to do. The deities, the unnamed path, really transcend culture. Just like men who love men, we as a tribe transcend all languages and all cultures and all time periods, because we have existed throughout every culture and every time period. And it's our unique capacity as men who love men, as men who love differently, who vibrate at a different frequency than the other men. That's what binds us together.
I like it.
Yes, very much agree. Yeah, it's different headspaces. Like Matthew was saying, when I think about it, I think, you know, if you already have a relationship with, like, Hecate, and you are also developing a relationship with the Dark Goddess, you know, they are not the same. They may have similar aspects to them, but they are two different beings. You know, you do your stuff with Hecate, and then you do your stuff with the Dark Goddess.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a little bit of overlap, but they are two separate deities, and you just have to kind of train your mind to keep them separate so that there's not too much, you know, merging of it.
Right. It's like Zeus is in Jupiter.
Yes. Exactly. So, did you have any other questions?
No, I don't think so. Both of you answered those very satisfactorily. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, we hope you'll, you know, continue listening to the show as we go on.
Oh, I will, trust me.
You know, or stay on the line and you know, chat with us, as you know, for the rest of the episode. I love having company. I pride myself on being a good host. if we were together in person, I would serve coffee.
I was just going to say, actually, I just made a pot of coffee, so this works out perfectly.
So actually, Michael, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Have you listened to Hyperion's podcast?
But you're talking to me, Michael, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh. Yes, I've gone back and started listening to some of Hyperion's original material because I am interested in apprenticing to the Unnamed Path. And I'm probably about, I think, 4 episodes in, and it's awesome stuff. I love it. But I have to be careful because his voice kind of puts me to sleep if it's too late at night.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens.
He's kind of like that hypnotic quality.
So that being said, let's, you know, we definitely want to give the Light Goddess her due. So do either of you have any questions for me as a child of the Light Goddess? Or are you, you know, do you have any particular angles that you're curious about?
So I recall from, I think, one of the other podcasts, hearing that the Light God and Goddess are more cerebral, I guess you could say, or more more intellectually focused, possibly. Now, also following the qualities of, you know, quote unquote, light gods and goddesses that I'm familiar with, does that tend to go in a direction of things like healing or, you know, prophecy, things like that? That may be, you know, things that everybody does, regardless of which deity they're a child of. But do you find yourself doing more of this or that as a child of the Light Goddess?
Yes and no. you know, I can only speak to my experience, right? So someone else, you know, who's a child of Light Goddess might, you know, is going to have their own experience. So here's what mine looks like. In the Unnamed Path, we have 4 deities and we have 4 practices, the energy healing, magic and prophecy, shamanic practice, and death walking. And each one of those practices is loosely affiliated with one of the deities. So if we look at the light goddess, we, from a bird's eye view, we can say that energy healing is her specialty. Not that the other gods can't teach you or empower you in energy healing or energy balancing. They certainly can. But, you know, the understanding is that for the light goddess, that's her special specialty. Because she is manifest nature. She is the cycle of life. She is embodied in the seasons and in the oceans and the movements of the stars and all of those things that create balance and create physical bodies. And therefore she is a expert in creating balance and health in physical bodies for all life forms. So does that mean that I, as a child of the light goddess, am I an expert energy healer or energy balancer? I do not consider myself that at all. I actually consider myself a novice in that department. I am much stronger. I've spent my whole life doing magic and prophecy from the time I was 12. So I know a lot about that. I have a lot of experience in that department. That actually has been identified as my personal specialty. And I also am very comfortable with shamanic journeying. It's something that, although I don't have as much experience in, I'm comfortable with it. I have a knack for it. The other two, death walking and energy work, I'm not as comfortable with, and I'm still consider myself very much a humble student in both of those. So that's what my experience has looked like.
Matthew, can you tell us about, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, could you tell us about, you know, during the apprenticeship and even in the podcast, they do a path working to meet the light goddess, and actually all the gods. That it's later on in the original podcast where he does the path working to meet them. And we also do that in the apprenticeship courses where we take the students to meet the gods and goddesses individually. Could you tell us about the first time you met the light goddess? You know, and everyone who's listening, remember, this is going to be different for each brother. So what Matthew sees isn't necessarily going to be what someone else encountered.
Oh, gosh, I have to pull out my journal and look that up.
Picture it, Sicily, 1942.
And as, funnily enough, I just did a path working to the light goddess today in preparation of today's episode, just to kind of get into that vibe. So my first experience of the light goddess within an unnamed path context. So she appeared to me as she was very familiar to me, and I think, and I know other people have had different experiences, but for me, I've had a strong connection with a spirit, with an angelic being, with whatever, with a presence. From the time I was a child, there was always this female voice that would speak to me from the time I was a child. And when I was 10, 12 years old and I found out about Wicca, I said, oh, well, this must be the goddess. This must be, you know, and therefore this must be the path for me. And as my journey evolved and my relationship with this voice progressed, you know, it was always kind of like, well, this is Diana. Well, not really. Okay, well, this is Isis. Well, not really. Okay, this is Aphrodite Urania. Well, not really. And so when I discovered Unnamed Path and I was introduced to the light goddess within that context, I really felt like, aha, this is who she is. Because none of the cultural goddesses from any of the polytheistic traditions really quite clicked. You know, there are always these similarities, and yeah, she could put on the Isis costume, or she could put on the Ishtar costume. You know, of course, being like goddess, she has a fabulous wardrobe. But she was always something greater than, always something slightly more mysterious than these cultural deities. And I never felt at home. I never felt quite at home with, whether it be Brigid in the Druidic tradition, or whether it be Aradia in the Wiccan tradition. I felt a connection, but it didn't quite come into place until Unnamed Path, and then it's like, okay, well, this is the way it is, you know. This is the fit. And one thing, and Hyperion mentions this, these deities will wear costumes. He does mention in episode 4, he specifically mentions the dark goddess appearing to him in the guise of Hecate. So one of the common elements in my experience is oftentimes the light goddess will, in my journey work, she'll appear like the Blessed Virgin Mary, because that's such, you know, I was raised Catholic in a very Catholic household, and that imagery is so deeply embedded in my consciousness that it's a very comfortable and easy fit for her to work with me through that lens. Or because I've spent so many years in exploring polytheistic traditions, she will just as readily appear as Athena. Or, you know, sometimes it doesn't have to be from a religion. You know, they'll manifest as figures from literature. You know, I think there are brothers who've had the experience of Light Goddess where she appears looking like Galadriel. And
yes.
So one of, I think it's Tommy Starchild who uses the wonderful metaphor of, we have these images in our heads, and these images are like a Rolodex. And then when these multidimensional beings, which are really beyond our comprehension, are interacting with us, they'll go flip through the Rolodex in your brain, and they'll pick out the costume that you're going to understand them best.
That fits the message.
Right.
Let me just jump in real quick, Matthew. We have our brother Scott, who's very into Star Wars. So they appear as, so the deities will appear as like Star Wars figures to him. Just saying.
I think that's a great example.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I have a relationship with Hecate, and she doesn't appear to me as a crone at all. If you delve into, you know, her mysteries a little bit, you find out that historically she was more of a maiden than anything, which makes sense with my experience because she appears to me looking a lot like Abby from NCIS.
I love
okay,
that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like she's a goth raver chick.
mm-hmm.
So yeah, it it entirely depends on the message and what speaks to you and what makes sense to you and, you know, all of that. Yeah, that I agree with that.
And one thing that struck me many, many years ago is ours isn't the only tradition that's like that. One time back in the day of libraries and physical books, I checked out this wonderful book from the library, and it was a coffee table book. It was mostly beautiful photographs of voodoo altars from Haiti. And what struck me in these beautiful altars and beautiful representations of their deities is not only would they often use images of Catholic saints to represent deities, but they would use whatever they could find. So there would be photographs torn out of magazines. There would be action figures. Anything that they found, anything that they find in the world around them that resonates with their whatever deity or spirit that they wish to work with, they will use. And it was really freeing to me because at that time, you know, I had thought, okay, well, you know, if you're going to work with Odin, then, you know, if you're going to represent him, it's got to be an image of Odin. And just looking at this book kind of opened up my mind to a whole new possibility and awareness that spiritual beings are comfortable with metaphor. They're comfortable with us using imagery that is similar to them. So it's okay to have a little bit of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bodies are limiting things, and you know, deities exist in a realm that, you know, doesn't know the limitations of the flesh. So, yeah, appearing in the guise of, you know, this or that is probably entertaining for them if they're drawing it from our consciousness and they're like, really? Seriously? But, you know, it also gives them kind of an exposure to taking an appearance,
right,
which is probably the closest thing to a human experience that most of them ever get. So I did have another question also specifically for working with the light goddess, although this does kind of apply to the other deities as well. Do you find that there's anything that, for example, in Santeria, in the Afro-Caribbean traditions, there are taboos and things that the spirits don't want their followers doing for this or that reason. Do you find anything like that specifically in working with the light goddess that, you know, she wants you to avoid or, you know, isn't a big fan of you doing, or then also at the greater level with the other deities, do you find that to be the case?
I've not experienced or encountered any universal taboos. I know in Afro-Caribbean traditions, if someone is a child of a particular Orisha or Loa, all the children of that particular Orisha or Loa may be forbidden from doing X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
In unnamed path, I've not experienced that. The only thing that I've seen, I have seen deities come down and make it very clear to an individual, okay, you are not to drink. But it's very personalized because, mm-hmm. and it's based on that's what's necessary for that individual's progress. That's it's not a universal taboo, it's a personal taboo because that's the track, that's the constraint that's going to help best allow that individual to flourish. As far as the light goddess is concerned, don't go to the light goddess with petty personal problems.
Yeah.
She's not interested. She is big picture, and I know you asked earlier, are the light deities seem to be cerebral? Well, the light god and the light goddess are upper world, and the upper world is mental. It's a big picture. The lower, the dark god and goddess are lower world, which is more physical, sensual, sexual, and
primal.
Animalistic. Yes. So the light goddess in particular, and I could be wrong. I think it's universal. This is my experience. I have a feeling it's everyone else's experiences too. I could be wrong. Is she's not interested in personal petty problems. If you are have a tete-a-tete with someone in the workplace, she's just going to give you a look. Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a divine
being. You in danger, girl.
Right. You're a divine being with spiritual gifts. Grow up. So that's, you know, that's my mama. So, and that's, you know, and I get it, right? Because, you know, I do have a close relationship with her, and I've been able to, you know, on many occasions journey to her realm, and part of, I think in my journey, part of my job is to take that bird's eye view of things. And I have that capacity to do that. I have that talent to see things from that broad perspective. And you can't take a bird's eye view of things and be all tangled up in a personal petty vendetta. And then likewise,
it's
the other deities have their own personalities as well.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, it's kind of interesting because my relationship with the light goddess, I would say, is probably one of my weaker relationships with her, you know, with any of the deities. You know, I work with her, but I'm not that close to her. It's kind of, you know, when Matthew was saying, you know, she has very little time for, you know, people. When I see her, you know, when it's kind of like, oh gosh, how do I say this? I'm very much one of those people who, when I go to visit the light goddess, I envision her very much like Galadriel, you know, very bright, very statuesque, you know, just, I don't know how else to describe her. You know, she's there, and she's busy with overlooking everything in the universe that is all of creation. And if I ask her a question that is very, like, I'm having issues with this, I'm having issues with that, I'll get a look that, think of Bea Arthur when she's tired of someone's bullshit.
Shady Pines, Ma.
That is what I see when I go to her with, you know, little petty problems and whatnot, which is probably why, you know, I don't really go to her all that much. But I still, you know, even though I don't go to her all that often, you know, I do a little bit of energy work with her because I may not actually be working on an individual, but I will be, you know, channeling healing energy towards a friend who asks it, who lives like in another city or another state, you know, working with that energy flow that she, you know, feeds into my brain and how to work with. It's kind of how I do my individual practice with her, my worship with her. Or not worship, my practice is definitely the better word. And, you know, when I first interacted with her, when I went to see her, I pictured her at the top of a shining ivory tower picture, never-ending story. You know, the ivory tower with a childlike empress reside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I saw when I first went to see her. Definitely wasn't a childlike empress. But, but yeah. That's my interaction with her. Definitely need to visit her more often, though. You know, that is a relationship that I know I need to work on a little bit more myself.
And I can back up Michael's experience, because I think that a number of both students and initiates have similar interactions with the light goddess, and I always chuckle because, you know, I've heard it said, well, why is she like that? You know, why is she so distant and cold? And my reaction is, because she's the embodiment of love. Because she loves you. And by that I mean, and this is my gnosis, if you will, it's that universal love. You know, it's that complete love and acceptance, but not just of you, but of everyone. So, of course, if you have personal beef with someone, she doesn't have time for that because she loves you, but she loves that other person too. And in her, you know, it's like, you know, if you're going to connect with her and embody her energy, then you need to just be loving each other and put that stupidity aside. That's, again, is that upper world, very upper world, bird's eye perspective. And Michael's not the only one who visits her, and she's busy overseeing the entire cosmos. And that's a recurring theme with many of the individuals who develop a relationship with her. And my way of thinking is, well, that's a really valuable and important lesson for all of us. You know, how wonderful an opportunity for each of us to come into the fullness of our potential by putting aside the pettiness.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I wouldn't think that way. I'm a child of hers.
If she were a tarot card, how would you characterize her?
Oh, boy. If she were a tarot card, Well, you know, I think there's elements of both the High Priestess and the Empress there. I guess if we go with the, let's say, the Rider-Waite, I would probably lean more towards the High Priestess because of that coolness.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are aspects of her, she is all of nature. So she does include, you know, some have said that she includes Gaia. She includes Mother Ocean. But she also transcends those aspects as well. So I guess if I really had to pick, I would probably have to go with the High Priestess.
Yeah, that was my first thought. My first thought was Empress when he asked that. So I was like, yeah, I'm the Empress.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that fits too.
I imagine that probably changes depending on what your relationship is with her and, you know, what aspect of her personality manifests most strongly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, because these are, I like the term multidimensional. These are multidimensional beings, so they can't just be boiled down to one archetype. They can't just be boiled down to one image. Each one of the deities has many faces.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something that I don't think, you know, a lot of people know about our deities and their name path, and it's something that they can't know unless they've become an initiated brothers, there is each, you know, we call our deities, you know, the light goddess, the light god, the dark goddess, the dark god, but they do have names. And that is info that you get when you've been initiated in the past. You know, we have, you know, we all have our own individual names for them, like we'll call them mother, father, lover, teacher, or something else, however we want to refer to them. But mm-hmm. when we've really, really dug into the info, really, really dug into our relationship with them and made the commitment to join the Brotherhood, we learn they have a true name and it's only shared among brothers.
Yeah.
We're initiated
brothers. They have names. Yeah, they have names, but we can't tell you what they are.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, you know,
but
anyone who studies
sometimes I like to refer to them as Stella, Sophie, Sunny, and Rocky.
Hmm.
And I'll just leave that there for everyone else to figure out who is whom.
So something else that occurs to me, you know, with I go to this gathering that I think I've actually talked to probably both of you about, called Between the Worlds. And one of the things that we do during the gathering is we pay homage to what we call queer spirit. Do you think that with the concept of queer spirit, do you envision these four deities as all kind of making, all being parts of queer spirit itself? Or do you think that you know, there are any particular deities in the Unnamed Path that are more aligned with the full embodiment of queer spirit, or how do you think that would work?
That's very interesting. So it's hard for me to reply because when you say queer spirit, I don't know who that is. I don't know exactly who slash what you're referring to. And can you give me more? Because, I mean, I can imagine and pretend that I know, but I think I would be doing you a disservice. So can you give me a little more background?
Yeah, we tend to think of queer spirit as basically the primordial force of queerness itself. You know, what makes each of us who we are within that spectrum of being queer, as being men who love men. And actually, now that I think about it, I'm not sure that queer spirit wouldn't necessarily simply be the conglomeration of the ancestors, maybe.
So the first thing that came to my mind when you're talking about queer spirit is that that's analogous to what we refer to as the ancestors of men who love men. And that is those, and we visualize them as the ancestors, all the ancestors of men who love men, who are dancing around the sacred bonfire in the underworld. That's how we interact with that. Now, that being said, I don't know, in your working, when you're talking about queer spirit, I'm assuming that that includes lesbians, bisexual women, and the spectrum of female genders?
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure that I've ever heard it stated specifically, but I feel like it is more broadly encompassing of queerness in general, and that, you know, at our event, we mostly just work with the men who love men side of that. But yeah, I would characterize it as the spirit of all queerness, most likely.
Okay, so in your practice, are there women who participate and resonate with that?
Well, it's a men-only event. So I don't necessarily know if the lesbian side of the queer spirituality pays homage to the queer spirit necessarily or not.
Okay.
But
yeah. So my thought is that they may certainly be analogous. So queer spirit in your work may be analogous to our ancestors of men who love men. The one caveat is that Unnamed Path is it is a men's only space. Just as there are spiritual traditions that are women's only spaces. And specifically, it's a brotherhood specific to men who love men. We do fully embrace people who identify as men who may have not been assigned that gender by society when they were born. So that means that trans men who identify as men who love men, if they spiritually connect with our unique current, are warmly, 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 warmly welcomed into our experience. And, you know, we're talking about spirit and we're talking about vibration. So it's a connection that can't be defined by social or political labels. And that's why we stay away from the words gay and why we stay away from the words bi, because someone can call themselves gay or call themselves bi, but maybe deep down inside they really don't resonate on the same frequency as the rest of this collective current. And, you know, you can't just belong because you say you belong. And you can't just belong because I say you belong. There's got to be that vibration. And you can't fool the spirits. They know.
Right.
And, you know, this is why some people, you know, it's not a path for everyone. And there are those who naturally vibrate and gravitate towards this current. And then there are other people who, you know, they might be curious about it and start out, but if they're not really connecting with that vibration, they're naturally just going to drift away and drift towards the path and the current that does resonate with who they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it almost makes me think of queer spirit almost as the glue that holds us together, maybe, with the deities and the ancestors. You know, the threads that kind of weave themselves through relationships and time and incarnations and all of that.
Yes. And I don't know if you've gotten to that episode yet, but in one of the podcasts, Hyperion speaks of a pink thread. And this is based on traditions. So there's the red thread that connects people of a certain bloodline or a certain blood heritage. And in the Unnamed Path, in our connection with the ancestors of men who love men, we refer to a pink thread that joins us with all of our, you know, all the men who love men who are living, all the men who love men who have ever lived, and who ever will live in the future, time being an illusion. So that would include, you know, I think in our collective, if you will, that would certainly include figures like Harvey Milk and Oscar Wilde and Alexander the Great and Hephaestion and all of the wonderful ancestors of men who love men, both the ones whose names we know and the countless ones who aren't known to history, but who are dancing around that bonfire and who are helping us and supporting us in our work today. It's kind of my experience that, you know, communication is a two-way street, and I've done practices that are simply an expression of my own creativity and an expression of how I think, how I feel things ought to be. And that's a very powerful act, and I encourage certainly traditions, and I think it's wonderful for people to express themselves and create new traditions and to create new paths. Unnamed Path, it's not so much us setting the rules. We're receiving information from the ancestors. They're driving the bus. And so in a way, of course, it goes, you know, there is a push and pull. There is a communication. But I, in this work, I try not to put too much of my own personality into it. And I try, and it's hard, and I don't think I'm even very good at it. But I try to listen and to be receptive to what the ancestors are asking and what the ancestors are advising us to do. And, you know, when you're talking, when you're interacting with, a man who loves man, spiritual healer from the North Africa during the Neolithic period of history, they are not going to necessarily fit in with the what we consider politically correct. They're not going to necessarily fit in with our ideas about society and labels today, because they're coming from a completely different experience. And I think the more we can suspend our own biases, the better prepared we are to receive this really, really deep wisdom from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very much mystery and gnosis driven, I would think.
Yeah, that's been my experience, and that's certainly the way I try to approach it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You know, I think, you know, we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up, because, you know, we're already an hour and 30 minutes into the show.
Oh, holy cow.
I'm fine.
Really good. Matthew, as a child of the Light Goddess, do you have any words or something you'd like to say to people who are wanting to get to know her more?
She's everywhere, and she's everywhere, and she loves you, and, you know, more impactful than fancy rituals or expensive offerings or fabulous costumes or anything like that is go to the beach and watch the sunlight on the surface of the ocean. Go outside tonight and look at the stars. Sit on your front porch and just listen to the breeze. Create space, create silence, and in that space and in that silence, she will speak to you, and your personal spirit guides, your elevated spirit guides will speak to you. And unplug, turn off your cell phone, turn off the TV, and this world is a gift. Enjoy it. Every space here is precious. You know, we shouldn't be hiding in our air-conditioned sepulchres. You know, we have an opportunity for deeper connection with everything around us.
Mm-hmm. That was lovely. And, you know, thank you, Michael, for joining us for the, you know, second half of the show. It was wonderful
right?
to chat with you and some amazing questions.
Thank
Michael,
you.
It's
been a wonderful experience getting to talk to you guys and hear about all the things.
Yeah. We're so glad you called. Definitely call in anytime, because we're doing this for you. You know, we want to hear your questions and your perspectives, and it's always more fun when callers call in.
Mm-hmm. Yay! Well, awesome.
Well, we're going to end the show, and I think we'll play out with a song. We're going to play out with Kellyanna Lady Moon. Again, thank you for listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. I'm Michael Graywolf. My co-host is
Matthew Sidney, and thank you guys for tuning in. I love you all, and we'll chat again soon.
Yes. All right, and this is, again, Kellyanna Lady Moon. Again, thank you again for listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. I am Michael Graywolf, my fabulous co-host, Matthew Sidney. We would like to, I can't speak, I'm still caught up in the music from, oh yeah, that was Kalyana, Lady Moon. Still coming down from that, oh, such a great song. But if you'd like to get in touch with Matthew or myself, you can email us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. If you have any ideas for shows or questions, if you have any questions about today's show, please shoot us an email and we'll try to answer it in the next one. Or if you have any questions about any of the upcoming shows, because again, this is part one of four in a series of talking about the gods and goddesses of the Unnamed Path. So again, can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at walking_theup or again on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Thank you, your caller Michael, for calling in and having such awesome questions. We hope you have a great week. Happy, what is it? Memorial Day, right? Yes, happy Memorial Day. Have a blessed day and, go outside and just, be one with the goddess. And let me do the outro.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans.